Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, David and I discuss the Last Dance documentary about the 1990s Chicago Bulls.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at JYarko underscore Bucks, at DH82 underscore Bucks, and at Bucks underscore Nation. Today's topic of discussion is going to be The Last Dance, the ESPN Netflix documentary about the Chicago Bulls, because why not? It took the sports world by storm because there haven't been any live sports. And I watched it. David's watched it. Why not talk about it a little bit? So I apologize if that is not your cup of tea. Come back Monday and we will be talking about Buccaneer stuff yet again. But thought we'd have a little fun today and talk about some Chicago Bulls and the legend that is Michael Jordan. So initially, right out of the gate, I absolutely loved this documentary. There, a lot of this stuff I already knew. I grew up a massive Bulls fan. Yeah, I was born into Michael Jordan hysteria. The very first NBA game I remember watching was my seventh birthday. And that was game one of the 1992 NBA Finals between the Bulls and the Blazers, when Jordan hit all those threes in the first half, the legendary shrug over to Magic Johnson after he hit another one. That was my first experience watching professional basketball. And what kid doesn't get sucked in when that's their exposure for the first time? I remember complaining to my dad. I had gotten some Disney VHS for you kids that don't know what that is. That's a videotape. That was before DVDs and Blu-rays. I had gotten some Disney movie or some kids movie for my birthday that I wanted to watch. And my dad said, you can watch it tomorrow. I want to watch the NBA Finals. So I sat down with him and I watched, and I was mesmerized by this Michael Jordan guy. And I didn't miss a Bulls game after that, way back before they did what is it called? The NBA League Pass. Every Bulls game was on WGN, which was on just regular cable. So I got to watch every Bulls game growing up, and I loved everything about this doc. It took me back. My kids got sucked in, and now my son walks around wearing a pair of Jordans, talking about how Jordan's the greatest player ever, and it was just a lot of fun. David, you and I have had quite a few off-air conversations about, you know, who's better, Michael or LeBron. And, you know, I had always said that Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time, but LeBron is a superior athlete. And you always told me I was wrong, but you watched this documentary and you came back and you're like, you know what? I take it back. You were right. I forgot about a lot of this stuff. So what was your thoughts on the documentary overall?
Yeah, I mean, so first of all, I'm not the first person to fall victim to recency bias.
Oh, not at all.
But at the same time, so going back to the time period of, you know, the docuseries and of Jordan, like I don't have any memories of watching basketball before we moved to Colorado, which would have been at the earliest in 1992. So I was over the age of 10 by the time I ever even remember watching a basketball game. And again, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you've already heard me kind of talk about this kind of stuff. But, you know, obviously I was born very, very young, so you don't really have a lot of memories from that time period. And then we spent kind of the earliest part of my memory was in Germany. And at that time, we didn't have the technology we do now. So in Germany, as an American, you had one station, you had one TV channel you could watch that was in English, and you're basically just at the mercy of whatever was on that channel. And a lot of times it was news. It wasn't, you know, basketball. My father is not a basketball fan. Even to this day, he's not a basketball fan. So that's not something that I grew up around. And then, yeah, getting into the 90s. So, you know, I missed, like, like Dennis Rodman. I don't have any memories of Dennis Rodman not being a Bull. Like he's all, in my mind, he's a Chicago Bull. He's not a Detroit Piston, even though I know the history of it. And I, you know, I knew the history coming into the docuseries, but it was just fun to see it and go through all that. Really, my earliest memories of anything Jordan related are with Reggie Miller and the Orlando Magic. Like that's really my earliest memories that I can just kind of go back and really grab hold of and tell you, yes, I remember seeing these on TV or as a kid. And then, you know, Marv Albert and all that stuff. So those are really where my personal experiences kind of go back to. So getting to see those again have was really fun, obviously. But then getting to, actually, I'm not going to lie. I had hoped there was a little bit more Penny. There wasn't that much Penny in there. It's okay. I forgive whoever made it. But I was hoping that there was a little bit more Penny in there because to this day, he still is actually my favorite basketball player of all time. Not the greatest player of all time. My personal favorite, Penny Hardaway. But it was fun to see it, man. Like, fun to see, like, the clips again of Jordan in North Carolina and then to see him getting drafted and kind of the early struggles. Seeing him with hair, you know what I mean? Seeing the early struggles and then kind of going over the whole, you know, Pistons overcoming the Celtics and the Bulls overcoming the Pistons. So it was a really fun documentary to get to see because it brought back some memories, but then it also filled in or refilled in kind of some of that knowledge that I didn't get to witness myself. But now I get to kind of have those images in my head as well. But yeah, I mean, just some of the things that MJ did. He's the GOAT, man. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big Penny fan too. When he came onto the scene, he was exciting to watch. That Orlando Magic team was exciting to watch. But yeah, I remember an interview with Michael Jordan. After he returned, and they had asked him about, you know, the Bulls having trouble with the Knicks and having trouble with the Magic, and he's like, yeah, it's like, you know, you move away for a little bit and then come back to find out that your kid brother's been getting picked on by the neighborhood bully, and you're going to do anything you can to, you know, fight back and protect him and make sure it doesn't happen again. So yeah, it was there was a lot of really, really interesting things that kind of went down, and we're going to get into those coming up next. But first off, David, we have a word from our sponsors. And you know who the sponsor is. It's our friends over at Built Bar. Built Bars are an amazing, tasty protein bar. It tastes like a candy bar. Comes in a ton of amazing flavors, covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, great for the health conscious person. And you know, I always talk about those brownie flavors. Today my bar of choice was a peanut butter brownie, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. They've just launched even more flavors: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, and blueberry lemon. David, I know you have some of those flavors on the way to your house. Going on right now for just a few more days. This offer ends on May 31st, but every box of bars is $5 off. On top of that, you throw in our promo code LOCKEDON and you get $10 off your order. So that means you want to go on there, you want to try them all, you want to figure out which flavors you like, you get the assorted box, boom, $5 off automatically. Promo code locked on. Now you're up to $15 off your first order at builtbar.com. So head over there, builtbar.com, promo code locked on to get $10 off your first order and take advantage of this $5 off every box of bars going on this week only.
Closing out the week here on the Locked On Bucks podcast, talking about the arguably one of the greatest, or maybe the greatest, sports dynasty of all time, the 90s Chicago Bulls. I think the New England Patriots probably would have a case to make against that. But anyway, so we've been talking about the Dennis Rodman-centered focus docuseries called The Last Dance about Dennis Rodman and his Bulls teammates from those years that he was there helping them win those 3 championships out of the 6 that they got. And James, as much as we all love Dennis, I think there was another player you wanted to cover in this segment.
Are we talking about Scottie Pippen?
Is that who we're talking about?
Well, I mean, we're going to talk plenty of Michael Jordan, but we can talk a little Scottie Pippen.
Oh, yeah. He was also there. Yeah. So one of Dennis Rodman's teammates was Scottie Pippen. So I suppose we can dedicate some time in the show to him as well.
Yeah, Scottie Pippen was not thrilled with his portrayal in this documentary. And not going to lie, there were some moments in this documentary that they made Scottie look like a big old wimp and a big old crybaby. Talking about, you know, he needed foot surgery, but he was going to wait because he was upset with Jerry Krause and Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner and the GM there. And his exact quote was, "I'm not going to ruin my summer." So by putting off the foot surgery, he basically screwed over his teammates on this kind of last run that they have for the championship because he was mad at management. Well, you know, Scottie was warned when he signed this extremely long-term contract that it was a bad deal and not to sign it. But given what was going on with his dad suffered a stroke. He was in a wheelchair. He wanted that financial stability. And so he signed a bad deal. And by time it got to the point where he wanted to try to renegotiate it, well, the NBA Players Association had in their collective bargaining agreement ruled that players cannot renegotiate existing contracts. So Scottie kind of screwed Scottie in that instance. Yeah, it's unfortunate that he was one of the best players in the NBA making, you know, the 122nd most in terms of salary, but he kind of did that to himself. So to take that out on his teammates as they're making a run for a third championship because he wasn't going to quote unquote ruin his summer, that's weak. That is weak. And then of course the other big moment was when he refused to come off the bench because Phil Jackson had drawn up a play for Tony Kukoc, and Scottie's saying, you know, you never would have done that to Michael Jordan. Well, Scottie, I hate to break it to you, man, but you're not Michael Jordan. You know, he drew up a play that he knew would work because it had worked. Tony Kukoc, you know, one of the best outside shooters and NBA sixth man of the year a couple of times, you know, that play was going to work. You can be the hero in the next game. Right now, it needs to be Tony. You know, Michael deferred to Steve Kerr to win a championship. You know, they had deferred to John Paxson to hit a buzzer beater to beat the Suns in 93. Michael had deferred to John Paxson the whole fourth quarter to clinch their first title against the Lakers. So it wasn't always about Michael. And it took him a while to understand when he needed to pass the ball. So for Scottie to do something like that and be so selfish, yeah, it's hard to make you come across looking good when you do stupid stuff like that.
Scottie looked fine, man. And you know, Scottie Pippen, you know, I don't know Scottie Pippen, but Scottie Pippen looked like a human being in this docuseries. That's what he looked like, and that's what he is. And, you know, you can only have one goat, right? Like, there's not two goats. There's not four goats. There's not a gaggle of goats. I don't know what a group of goats is called, but you can't have – like, I understand the Chicago Bulls won six titles in the 90s. You know, Scottie Pippen was there. Dennis Rodman was there. Steve Kerr was there. Got it. But there's only one ringleader of that whole thing, and that's Michael Jordan. You look at the New England Patriots, and again, you could argue that some of the Super Bowl wins that Tom Brady has had, that there were other players on that team that were actually more instrumental in that Super Bowl win that year than he was. But at the end of the day, there's only one GOAT. And it's everybody and every human being in face of the planet. If you're not the best in your profession or your walk of life, there's been a moment where you've gotten caught in your feelings. So every single human being has been through Scottie Pippen type situations and what he was going through. The quote of, "I'm not going to ruin my summer and get foot surgery," like, that was funny, one. But two, is also not true. Scottie Pippen didn't get foot surgery. And again, this is just me, right? Scottie Pippen didn't get foot surgery not because he didn't want to ruin his summer, because he wanted to stick it to the Bulls because he signed a bad deal with them. They knew that they had him on this bad deal, and he was mad that he couldn't get out of it or renegotiate it for whatever reason. So that was his way. He was throwing a tantrum. He was mad. He was caught up in his feelings, and everybody has been there before. The difference is when you play for the Chicago Bulls and you play with Michael Jordan, the microscope is on you, and 10 years after the fact or 20 years after the fact, they're going to make a documentary about it and blast all over national TV for a whole new generation of people who didn't even know what was going on to find out about it. Scottie has nothing to feel bad about. He made those decisions he made. But here's the thing that the documentary series, that the makers of the docuseries did well. Yes, they didn't hide the garbage. You know what I mean? They covered Scotty not going back into the game. They covered the disappointment, the Bill Cartwright, you know, just being devastated in the locker room. They covered the foot surgery, the contract saga, and all that stuff. But they also gave Scotty the opportunity, and he took it, and they aired it to have to come back and say, "This is what I was thinking. This is what I did. Was it right?" He even said that the playoff game situation. He even said, "If I had to do it again, I'd probably do it again." Was it the right thing to do? Probably not. But he did end up saying, "I would probably do the same thing." So that's just the honest truth. You know what I mean? And he needs to own who he is. I mean, he is one of the iconic players in basketball, in professional basketball. But he's not the GOAT. He's not the greatest of the teams that he was on. He's not the greatest of the franchise he played for. He's not the greatest of his era. He's Dan Marino. You know what I mean? Except Marino doesn't have championships. Like, he's really good. He's really solid. Everybody knows who you are, but you're not perfect. You're not expected to be perfect. So I don't know what he expected them, how they expected him to show, like if they expected him to hide all that stuff. But I mean, bro, they sat a camera in front of you and asked you about the stories. So why'd you think they weren't going to air him if, you know what I mean, if they asked you about him? I don't have a problem with the way that Scottie Pippen looked. Yes, me personally, like I don't like some of the things that he did. But again, he's a human being, man. Every human being on the face of the planet makes mistakes and they own them. The thing about Scotty that I like is that even when he made the mistakes, he always did what he could in his power and his ability to come back from those mistakes. You know what I mean? And I think that's really the true test of humans and just your life is it's not the mistakes that you make. It's how you bounce back from those mistakes or how you learn from those mistakes. As far as the contract, listen, I don't think Scotty signing that contract was a mistake. Now, when he did it, it was a mistake after the fact because he went on to be one of the best NBA players, you know, in the league at the time and da da da, and could have made a lot more money. And, you know, the league exploded, money exploded and all that other stuff. But when he signed that contract, there's a kid from Arkansas. He said it himself in the documentary. He said it in NBA 2K20. Kid from Arkansas, didn't have anything, you know, didn't have much. Came from a poor background. Wasn't a star basketball player in high school, wasn't recruited to play basketball at all. And then between his freshman and junior years of college at a really small, no-nothing school, he shot up a whole lot of inches. And all of a sudden, all the skills he did learn while he was short now translated much better because he had grown so much that now all of a sudden he's dominating people. And that got him on the radar. And then he goes to the NBA, and you know what are the conversation about him is, okay, he did well at, you know, the little school that he's in, but we see this every year with, you know, Division III guys and all this other stuff. Like, is it going to translate? Is it going to translate well? Is it going to translate? They don't know. And then again, he doesn't join. You know, when he comes into the league, the Bulls don't just start winning back to back to back championships, right? There are some struggles in there. There's some, you know, the Pistons are still better, the Celtics are still around, Larry Bird's still around, all that stuff. So when you're that kid and you're that college student and you're that pro who drafted, traded, is it going to happen? Are you going to last? We don't know. I don't blame him if I'm in that situation. And there's a little bit of self-doubt in there. I think that's what you kind of learned about Scottie Pippen is how much insecurity really he has or had about himself really throughout his career. So when you come to a person like that and you say, hey, we're going to give you this much money and we're going to give you job security for this many years, that's a dream come true for that kid. If he goes through the rest of his career and let's say MJ tears ACLs, ruptures Achilles, doesn't turn into the MJ that we all know. Let's say, you know, Dennis Rodman becomes the Dennis Rodman at his peak with the Detroit Pistons, stays there. Isaiah Thomas isn't a complete total a-hole. You know, if this whole thing never happens, then Scottie Pippen signed a genius deal because while they're blowing this whole thing up, he's getting there saying, nuh-uh, Chicago, you got me for this many more years, homie. Good luck. You know what I mean? But because it went the way that it did, that's why it's a bad decision. But just because the outcome wasn't as great as it could have been in that contract situation, doesn't make the decision bad. Because we see this all the time. We see guys, Melvin Gordon is a prime example. We see a guy going out and say, you know what? No, I'm not taking your, what I think is mediocre contract. I'm betting on me. And I'm going out here and do this. Shaquille Barrett did exactly that. And he won. And he hit. So everybody now says, man, that decision was amazing. If Shaquille Barrett comes to Tampa and fizzles and fails, and now he's out of the league, then Denver says, hey, man, we tried to set you up with 3 years on a backup deal, and you didn't want it. That's a terrible, you know what I mean? the result doesn't change the wisdom behind the decision. And I feel like knowing from where Scotty came from, the decision to take that deal, as bad as it turned out, was still a good decision when he made it.
I can see that. I can see how that's fair. Real quick, before we move on to Michael Jordan.
Who?
You know, that guy who's the greatest.
The guard that played with Rodman, the two guard that played with Rodman?
Yeah, the one that caught him and Carmen Electra in Rodman's apartment when he decided to take a three-week, four-week vacation without permission. Yeah, that guy. Do you know the two teams that Scottie Pippen was nearly traded to during all this drama?
Not at all.
Okay.
The Portland Trailblazers.
No. The first team that he was almost traded to was the Seattle Supersonics in exchange for Sean Kemp.
That's an interesting parallel universe.
Yeah, but see, I don't think the Bulls are as good with Kemp as they are with Pippen. Kemp was not the defender. He was not the outside shooter. But Kemp and Rodman and Jordan together, that's interesting to me. Now, the other team he was nearly traded to was the Boston Celtics. And that was going to be in exchange for draft capital that the Bulls were planning on using on Keith Van Horn. Now, that deal fell apart on draft day because the New Jersey Nets traded up ahead of the Celtics and selected Van Horn.
All right. That's interesting.
That's a little something that I learned. I was listening to an audiobook about the Bulls and Michael Jordan, and those nuggets were in there, and I found that to be quite interesting because we saw in the documentary Jerry Krause talking about they had some offers on the table that they felt were very good offers. Well, turned out those were, you know, the two big ones that nearly came together and were almost a done deal. You know, had the Nets not jumped up and Van Horn fell to the Celtics, Scottie Pippen would have been traded. So,
yeah. You know,
found that to be,
speaking of nuggets.
Ooh.
I think about Scottie Pippen, right?
The Denver kind?
Yeah. So I think about Scottie Pippen, and it reminds me a little bit of Carmelo Anthony. So Carmelo Anthony's career obviously did not go the way that he thought it would go once he left Denver. And, you know, not throwing any shade on him as a player. He was a very good player and, you know, one of the best pure scorers, you know, in the game during his time. Got it. But what he showed is he wasn't ever the guy that was going to be the catalyst for greatness. You know what I mean? The closest he ever got the Denver Nuggets was to the conference championship, where they lost to the Los Angeles Lakers, deservedly so. And, you know, that's just is what it is. And I think that the Scottie Pippen-led Bulls probably could have reached similar type of heights. If Scottie Pippen plays for, you know, I don't know, the New Jersey Nets or the Minnesota Timberwolves or a team that doesn't have an MJ, a Larry Bird, you know what I mean? Then he could be going down to history as that franchise's greatest player ever. And, I mean, Carmelo, you know, I'm sure there's some Nuggets fans that would want to argue with other players from Nuggets past, the Nuggets history, and maybe, you know, Jokic will meet that criteria at some point in time or whatever. But for right now, I think Carmelo Anthony would be most likely named the best Nugget, you know, to ever suit up. You put him on kind of one of these, you know, these big threes. You put him with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, and he's at best the Dennis Rodman of the group or the Horace Grant of the group. You know what I mean? He's not the Pippen or the Jordan there in those situations. You put him with LeBron, he's going to be the Pippen to LeBron's MJ. And I think that is kind of just what Pippen's role was meant to be. And he, you know, he may not like it. He may feel like he deserves more credit, but I mean, he might get more credit with another franchise, but he's not getting those rings with another franchise.
I would agree 100%. All right, well, let's move over to MJ for a little bit. And before this documentary aired, Jordan had come out and said that he was a little concerned with the way he was going to be portrayed, which surprised me because he had final say on what made the air. But he was a little concerned about some of the footage from Bulls practices about how he treated his teammates. And we saw him just really just giving it to Scotty Burrell. Poor Scotty Burrell, man. That kid, and he took it on the chin and kept smiling, and Jordan was calling him all kinds of names. Come to find out, you know, that the footage that they showed was pretty much the Disney version of how Jordan was in these practices. He was far worse than what they showed on TV. But you had that interview with Michael, that talking head, so to speak, where he's saying, you know, you don't want to play that way, don't play that way, and got real emotional and called for a break because he was getting so upset. You know, he never asked of his teammates or told his teammates to do anything that he didn't do himself. And I think one of the biggest shortcomings of Michael Jordan, which is hard to find when somebody is so good at what they do and so driven, he expected his teammates to be as good as him. He expected his teammates to do all the things that he did. And what I think he could never fully comprehend because of how competitive of a human being he is that they couldn't do what he did. It didn't matter how many times he asked them or demanded of them. They were not physically capable of doing the things that Michael Jordan could do. And I don't think he could ever fully understand that. I don't think he could look at Scotty Burrell and say, look, I can do this. Why can't you do this? He always held his teammates to a higher standard. And we talked about it the other day. You know, Pat McAfee had said on his radio show that he saw those same kind of things in Peyton Manning, that drive, that intensity, that unwillingness to lose. But some of these rare breed athletes like Peyton, like Michael, like Tom Brady, they don't understand why their teammates can't do what they do. And I think seeing that side of Michael kind of humanized him a little bit, but it's hard to humanize someone that was so superhuman.
You know, I think that in any type of competitive environment, you've got different kinds of people in those arenas, right? And in basketball specifically, you know, you've got the guys who are just there for the scene, the money, you know, the stature and the cars and all that stuff. And then you've got guys who just
partying with Carmen Electra.
Yeah, doing that. You've got the guys who just love playing basketball, so they just want to play basketball. You have the guys who enjoy success and they want to meet success. They dreamt of holding trophies and they want to continue to hold trophies and they truly love it. And then you have the guys who have to win. And I don't mean want to win. I mean have to win. And to me, that's what MJ is. MJ didn't want to be the best. MJ didn't strive to be the best, didn't want to win every game, didn't want to win every championship. He needed to do it. You know what I mean? And for a guy like Michael Jordan, I think that every loss hurt him more than it hurt other people. And as much as the rest of the room will look at someone like that and be like, man, you're a little off, you're a little weird, you're a little bit more intense, or maybe too intense, he's also in a situation where he's looking around the room and he doesn't recognize anybody. You know what I mean? Because that's such a rare type of attribute, characteristic. I even hesitate, honestly, to call it a quality, but we call it a quality because of the product, right? But again, you put that person, you put that personality on the Denver Nuggets, and that's going to go south pretty quickly because people only put up with that when the results go along with it. You look back at the Bill Parcells of the world and all that stuff. People only put up with those personalities when the results are worth it, you know, and people could see even earlier when, you know, they were still struggling against the Pistons. You go back to that docuseries, people talking about, you know, the late 80s Bulls and all that stuff. People could see that MJ was that guy that could get you to that, over that hill, over that hump. It's just, it was like, once we get over it, we're never coming back off of it. You know what I mean? So people could still see it in him that there was that quality about him. Whereas you look at a guy, tie it back to the Buccaneers, you look at a guy like Greg Schiano, and it's like, man, you're sitting, you're spitting fire and throwing, you know, brimstone at everybody and everything else, but your product sucks just as much as everybody else does, bro. So who are you yelling at? That's not going to work. You know what I mean? So I feel like a little bit of that conflict that you see and some of that emotional is this is MJ. And like you said, he doesn't understand why everybody else can't be the same, but he also, there's probably a part of him that says, why am I so different than everybody else? And do I need to be this different from everybody else? You know what I mean? It's taxing, man. I mean, it has to be. It's got to be a stressful life. Like, I mean, talk about playing cards and the gambling and the golf and everything. Like, this dude just, he constantly has to have some sort of conflict in his life, and he's got to come away as the winner over that conflict, or else he doesn't feel normal. That has to be exhausting. And then you get into the age that he is now, and I mean, you bring all those memories back up and you show it back on film and on tape and everything, and just brings all those emotions back up to the surface. I mean, yeah, it's unique and it's individualistic. And I don't know. I mean, I understand, like, Bruce Arians, right, in our other episode, we shared the clips from his talk with Joe Maddon, said that the closest he's experienced that or seen that in football is Peyton Manning. I don't think Peyton Manning is on that level. I don't think Tom Brady's on that level. If Michael Jordan had a brother in the NBA, I don't think Michael Jordan would be at the NBA Finals celebrating his brother winning an NBA final.
No.
I think Michael Jordan would be at home pissed off because my little brother is winning my title. Honestly, like, that's how different MJ's level of competitiveness. It goes beyond competitiveness. Like, I don't think it's something he created. Like, you know, going back to the doctors again, they talk about the story. Well, I can't remember the name of the player, but it was the player that had, you know, one of those just like one in a lifetime nights for most guys.
Oh, from
absolutely
Washington.
Lit it up. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
lit
that
it up.
Poor kid.
Yeah, and they're like, you know, he said, hey, good game, MJ, or something like that. And he never said it. MJ created that. But I don't think MJ sat there and said, what can I create to make me more motivated the next time we play these guys? I think it's just something that happened. I think, literally, he's in the locker room or in the shower or on the bus or wherever, and there's a voice in his head that says, hey, MJ, that guy just said, nice game. Nice game, Mike. And he's like, well, no, that's not going to fly. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, none of this stuff is stuff that MJ did and said, I'm going to work harder than everybody else. It's just who he is. And with Burrell, you know, I do kind of feel bad for the guy because, I mean, you know, that couldn't have been fun. But Steve Kerr demonstrated the best.
Yes.
What MJ was looking for, so I'm kind of trying to wrap up this whole thing, right? So MJ is looking around the room and he says, you guys aren't like me. And that makes me feel like I shouldn't be where I am or who I am. And I need to know that that's okay. So that's where the adulation, that's where, you know, you see it like everybody, you know, we talk about how he's not, you know, the hot dog guy, you know, he's got the shrugs and he's got all that stuff, but you see in the doc series, he's got his own office. He's got his own entourage of guards. You know what I mean? So there is some special treatment to MJ that he's openly accepting that he's different and better than everybody else. And he's happy with it, but he still wants to know that those guys are like him in some way, shape or form, have the passion, have the drive, have all that stuff. So I think when he looks at a guy like Burrell, he looks at him and says, you aren't like me. And you make me feel like I shouldn't be like me. And I don't like that. So I'm going to lash out at you until you show me that there's something in you that's like me. When he did it with Steve Kerr, he got Steve Kerr to a point where Steve Kerr said, you know what, brother, you want to see my fire? Here's my fire. And we're going to throw down. And Mike, at that moment, is like, okay, you know what? This dude has a little bit of what I have in me and him. So now I don't feel different. Burrell never showed him that. And I think it probably bothers MJ more that Burrell never showed him that. That it bothers Burrell that MJ bullied him, honestly.
Do you buy the food poisoning story?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know. I don't care. I don't know. I mean, like, do I buy that he was sick? Yes.
He was absolutely sick. But do you buy that it was
food poisoned? Was he hungover? Did he go to Vegas? Right. You told me, like, there was rumors that maybe he had an overnight trip to Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't care. He didn't have the flu because the flu doesn't go away. Like, we get 24-hour bugs, but the flu itself does not go away in 24 hours. So it wasn't a flu game, I can tell you that. Best case scenario, it was a 24-hour bug game. Worst case scenario, it was a all-night bender in Vegas game. You know what I mean? But I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but none of those have the nice ring to it that the flu game has.
Yeah.
That just flows so well. Wrapping things up here on the Locked On Bucks podcast, we are talking about The Last Dance, the ESPN docuseries about the Chicago Bulls in the 1990s. David, what was your favorite part of the documentary?
My favorite part of the documentary
was it Carmen Electra?
No. Phil Jackson. Yeah.
My favorite general part or Jackson. Something specific about him or
just seeing more of his personality. Like, you know, so again, so going back to like my youth, right? Like even when I watched games, that's all I did. I watched the games. So like all the stories of like Nick Anderson, you know, saying 45 ain't 23 and all that. Like I didn't know all that stuff until I got older and I heard those stories. Like in those days, I never heard those stories. I never heard those quotes or those clips from people. You know what I mean? That's all outside stuff. And Phil Jackson's a guy that, you know, you always heard about kind of his unique style and his, you know, a lot of people call him like a hippie and all this other stuff. You always heard about it, but I didn't see, you know, I didn't watch a lot of like interviews back then. I didn't watch a lot of, when he was with the Lakers, I didn't watch a lot of interviews, post-game press conferences, you know what I mean? So this is really the first time I've been in middle to sit down and really just kind of have, you know, a one-on-one. There's a camera, there's Phil, and Phil is going to talk to you like Phil Jackson talks to you. And it's, you kind of get the depth of everything that Phil Jackson brings to the table. And it's funny because it's just such a mixture between cool, calm, collected, a guided sort of attack. But then you see the ferocity on the sideline and he's yelling at people and, you know, he's saying, get your act together and, you know, all this other stuff. So it's like that balance of being in the moment and being centered and all that other stuff. I don't practice it. So if I'm misquoting it, I'm sorry. But seeing all that kind of like, you know, that getting in harmony and all that stuff mixed with the competitiveness of professional sports and having to dominate your opponent through force. It was interesting to see. And I kind of have like a new respect for what he was able to accomplish. Cause I don't think a lot of guys could balance those two sides of this bit. Like you either have a coach usually that's, you know, considered kind of a player's coach and really nice guy and all that stuff like Eric Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra is not a guy you see really usually digging into guys like LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. Like if he's digging into a player, it's probably like Mike Bibby at the end of his career, you know what I mean? Or a ref. But Phil is a guy who can be the nice, you know, I've been avoiding saying, but the nice kumbaya type of guy at practice and leading the yoga sessions. But then at the same time, he can be the guy kicking Michael Jordan out of practice. And I think that's a skill that not a lot of people have.
That's why he's the Zen master, man.
Yeah.
I had a lot of favorite moments in this. I'm not going to run down all of them. I loved watching some of the footage that I had forgotten about or hadn't seen before. You know, kind of reliving my youth, reliving it through the eyes of my son Beckett, who was just fully engulfed in all that. He and I started sitting down and watching full games of, you know, some of Jordan's greatest games, and you know, just had a lot of fun that way. But I think what I liked the most is you take a look at the first 9 episodes and Jordan is just thrashing Gary Payton and Isaiah Thomas and you know, all these different people that he had had these encounters with throughout his career. And it gets to episodes 9 and 10. And I had told a buddy of mine that night, I said, I can't wait to see Jordan just let Reggie Miller have it. Because you know it's coming. This was right after he laughed hysterically and became the most popular GIF on Twitter at Gary Payton, who is no slouch. Yeah, you know, the dude's one of the best defensive players in the history of this game. And I thought Jordan should have given Payton more credit than he did. But, you know, he was taking no prisoners. He was taking his shots at everyone, you know, even teammates or former teammates and Horace Grant and things like that. But it got to Reggie Miller and the rivalry that they had and the fist fights that they had gotten into. I was like, I am here for it. I can't wait to see what he says about Reggie. Didn't say a word. Talked about how that was the toughest team that they had ever faced. You know, right up there with those Bad Boys Pistons. And I think by him not saying anything at all, it said everything about the respect that he and Reggie Miller have for one another. And for those that don't listen to Dan Patrick, Reggie Miller was on every Monday following these episodes. And Reggie makes it very clear. He respects MJ. He considers Jordan to be the greatest player of all time, but he does not like Michael Jordan. Does not like him one bit, and Michael doesn't like Reggie. There is no love lost between those two. But I thought his way of showing respect by not saying anything negative about Reggie Miller when they got to that 1998 Eastern Conference Final Series that went seven games, and you know, him talking about it being the toughest out and all that, I really took away from that that, you know, that was my favorite moment. That sign of respect to me was incredible, because there weren't many teams that I ever worried about as a Bulls fan when it came time for a playoff series. I was always a little bit worried about the New York Knicks, but the Indiana Pacers were built to beat the Chicago Bulls, and they should have beaten the Chicago Bulls in that series. And yeah, I remember that series very, very well. I just, that was personally my biggest takeaway. So David, any parting thoughts on the Last Dance before we get out of here?
I think the Detroit Pistons were the hardest team for Michael Jordan to ever beat in the playoffs. He just will never say it.
I think the Detroit Pistons were a bunch of dirty rats, and the only reason Bill Laimbeer even had a career was because he was in there to inflict pain.
He
was not a good basketball player.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to argue with that, but that was the hardest team for the Bulls with Michael Jordan to ever get past, and he just won't ever say it.
I think collectively you might be right, but I think that particular series against the Pacers was the more difficult of any of the series, just from the way that they were built and the way the game was played at that point. Yeah, because they had outlawed the dirty tactics of those Pistons teams. So
perhaps
fair enough. Isaiah Thomas is still a punk. All right, I think that's going to do it, David, unless you have any final thoughts on The Last Dance or Dennis Rodman or Carmen Electra.
No, it was a good series, and I'm really happy to see Dennis Rodman and his teammates get, you know, the attention and the celebration of their past that they deserve.
I'll forever love Rodzilla for what he did in Chicago. But with that, we are out of time. Appreciate all of you indulging us in getting to have this conversation. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was a nice little change of pace. I'm sure most of you watched the documentary, so you had your own thoughts, and it was fun to talk about. So, you know, moving forward, if you guys want us to talk about anything outside of the Buccaneers, just send us the voicemail. You know, ask us some random questions. You know, we did this whole debate thing for a while over food, and we did our Star Wars movie reviews as David went through the multiple trilogies for the first time. So, you know, anything's fair game, especially in the off season. We could dedicate some time on Fridays to answer those questions. You want to ask us music questions or other sports questions, whatever, it's open forum. Just give us a call at 813-444-5841. Check out everything going on over at BucksNation.com. Make sure you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JRCO_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, wash your hands, and we thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.